I was fortunate to play at a very good basketball school. And then you go away and you coach and you think that, you know, if I ever had a chance to coach here at Maryland, it'd be great. But I never thought I'd have the opportunity to come back and coach at Maryland.
Trimble with 3 seconds. Trimble for the win! Cowabunga!
A sellout crowd of 43,000 cheers Queen Elizabeth and her consort Prince Philip. Very special guests of the University of Maryland.
90 seconds to go. Vasquez for three in the lead. 78-77 Maryland.
I believe that the Terrapin is the loveliest, perhaps the most beautiful of all trees.
There's Wells to jump out, make the depth, and slam it. Yikes. Brown will take it inside the five. Touchdown, Maryland. Terrapins beat Virginia Tech.
And no handshake for the coin toss from Maryland before the game today. It is on.
Okay, grab shell, dude.
Ha-ha! Righteous! Righteous!
And breaking free for the touchdown is Jay Sean Jones on his first touch as a Terp.
You're listening to Inside Maryland Sports Radio.
Your Maryland basketball team is number 6 in the country at 3-0, and the football team didn't even lose this weekend. How about that? And on this show, we take good news and we run with it. So you are listening to IMS Radio, and today we have with us the publisher of InsideMarylandSports.com, Jeff Ehrman, football and football recruiting reporter Med Gafir, and as always, I'm your host, Paul Douglas. Since last we spoke, the Maryland basketball team has played real games. They're 3-0 so far. They've beaten Holy Cross 95-71. They've beaten Rhode Island, what it might end up being a decent Rhode Island squad, 73-55. And 80-50 over Oakland, Michigan, not California. Jeff Ehrman, when you look at what we've seen so far, it's kind of a so far so good scenario, I think.
Yeah, it's so far great. But, you know, it's the same exact caveat that I kept saying early in the football season, right? We kept talking about how great they were. And every time I said, with the caveat that they've only played Howard and Syracuse, same thing. I agree with you. I think that Rhode Island team is pretty solid. Like, that's going to be a pretty decent win down the road. But, you know, they haven't really played much of anybody. But, man, he's not faking the funk on picking up the pace. Finally, he's actually using pressure defense. These young guys, Aaron Wiggins, with the exception of his three-point shot, which is bound to come along, looks incredible. I mean, the guy's averaging 3 steals a game, like 6 rebounds. And Anthony Cowan's been the unselfish guy that you wanted him to be. So it's only 3 games. Haven't played much of anybody, but you couldn't ask for a better start, I don't think.
Yeah, it's what we were talking about before the season. It was like, okay, when you look at this roster, you know, you don't need to be, you know, Gary Williams or Coach K or whoever to figure out that you look at these guys and you think, okay, they're long, they're athletic, you know, run them. Just run them and see what happens. And to this point, it looks like that's what Turgeons decide to do. And it's not just about being more aggressive on offense, whether it's getting, you know, defensive rebounds or even the secondary break after made baskets and things like that. On defense, it does appear that they're starting to jump passing lanes a little bit more. You know, he's throwing out that weird kind of 1-3-1 zone. We saw 3-2 zone for a little while, a couple weeks or last week. You know, I'm not ready to declare, new Turge, you know, as like some new evolved version of Mark Turgeon. But to this point, you know, we haven't seen this kind of, I don't want to call it innovation, but him stepping out of what's his normal, you know, coaching style like we have this year, I don't think.
Yeah, we have a story on the site by Alex, our guy who's doing these analytics articles, which are
excellent, by the way.
It's totally worth your subscription. Too many numbers. I get a headache halfway through, but people love analytics. I'm more of a look test kind of. I'm like an old OWG for those who know what that means.
So old.
Yeah. But you know, some of the stats in his story today, they're scoring 18.9 points per game in the first 10 seconds off of defensive rebounds. So they're getting out and running versus 8.8 points per game in that situation last year. A lot of other stats on there. You know, they're not the fastest tempo in the country, but they are you know, clearly his fastest team so far, again, after three games against not much competition.
Right. I mean, we've seen from time to time early in the season against these donkey teams that Turge will run a little bit and, you know, kind of feel like, you know, this is the way I want to go. This is what the players, you know, are probably best at doing. We'll up the tempo. But then the second anything goes wrong, he falls right back into Turge ball. Right.
Yeah. But it's you can tell it's been ingrained into them during the offseason this year by the way they're getting those rebounds and taking off immediately, and even on some made shots, taking the ball out of the basket and tossing it up court.
Yeah, this so, feels different.
It really does.
Yeah, and the thing is, when you look at it, you know, if you want to look at one thing that's been a real problem so far, it's been these super poor starts where Maryland's gotten a little bit behind or played even with some of these lower teams in the first 8 to 10 minutes of the game. You know, a couple of those games, they've had as many as 8 to 10 turnovers, you know, in those really early moments. But to me, when you look back at it, a lot of that seems to be turnovers on the fast break, you know, turnovers trying to move the ball around quickly, you know, things that seem to come with that aggressive style that to some degree you just need to eat some here and there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what is it? Errors of commission and not omission, right?
Right.
So they're being aggressive and, you know, let's wait. I think there's really not a great test on the schedule, I don't think, until Seton Hall, which is still, what, like a month away? Mm-hmm. So that's the bummer with the schedule. You just, you know, you don't know, and I'm sure once they get to that point, they'll probably take a little step. I mean, they're already getting off to these slow starts. What happens once you play a real team? You know, do you, and you have to adjust. That's really the only thing they've done wrong for the most part. I'm a little concerned about the defensive rebounding. That, I think, to me, that's going to be their biggest issue all year. You know, they struggle on the defensive glass. They're just thin, you know, and young in the front court. You've got a freshman and a sophomore, Mitchell and Lindo, playing a lot of minutes. And then you've got Jalen Smith, who for all this talk about the weight he put on, still, you know, he's still not playing like Bruno Fernando out there strength-wise. So that, to me, is the biggest thing to keep an eye on, defensive rebound. That's where if Shoal Merrill can somehow come out healthy and even, you know, decently effective, then that's a jackpot. But that's a little bit down the road.
Right. So we've been pretty happy so far, but if you know anything about this podcast, we're not going to keep that up forever. So let's talk about a few things that may be slightly concerning. Now, concerning when you're putting up a bunch of points and winning by 30 and number six in the country is relative, but still something right. You should keep an eye on as you lead up to basically what's your only test in the calendar year, which is Seton Hall in mid-December. So to me, you look at defensive rebounding. Now, you knew they were going to take a step back, you know, losing Bruno. That's just, you can price some of that in, okay? But they still need to be able to rebound at a decent clip. And to this point, they're not playing teams that have decent size down low. So that's a little bit concerning. To me, it looks like they've had some troubles when they've had to set up in the half court. They don't have a player they can play through on the block. I mean, it seems like at times they've run some sets where Jalen's been on the block and they've kind of passed in. But basically, I don't think of any of those sets he ever once looked out to the three-point line or tried to move the ball around. He just went to the basket.
No, so he's got that Charles Mitchell syndrome once he gets it down there.
That's a good pull.
It's not coming back out.
Yeah, it's a black hole at this point. That could be coached, and you know, Jalen's a smart kid. He'll figure that out. And I think there will be times where he'll get doubled too, and they'll need to know what to do with the ball to get it out of there, because that can really be effective on offense with the way that Maryland typically shoots three-point ball. Speaking of which, they're not falling right now. I don't think that's really a problem. I'm pretty sure that this team's going to shoot at a pretty good clip in the end, and this is just a little bit of a sideshow.
Yeah, 26.4%. It's a small sample size, and they did the same thing last year. Last year, after five or six games, I was saying this is going to be a terrible three-point shooting team all year. And then all of a sudden, Eric Ayala turns into like Larry Bird somehow, and everybody else starts shooting better about, what was it, probably 10 games in. This team has much better shooters. Wiggins will shoot way better. I think he's at like 22% over. He's been great with the exception of that. The funny thing is, most of his misses have been wide open three. So that's not going to happen forever. Morsell's a much better three-point shooter. You know, he continues to improve. To me, he's been the quiet story of the early season so far. He's shooting 66%. Guys just doing a little bit of everything, but they'll shoot better, you know. And even Sticks can shoot the three a little bit, although I still think he's a year away from, if he were to come back another year, he's a year away from a guy you really want out there shooting threes. But long story short, yeah, they're not going to shoot that poorly forever.
Yeah, that's not a thing I'm totally worried about. Now, if you look at the poor starts, now Daryl Morsell has been excellent so far this year, and he has been starting. I kind of wonder if he's not a better guy off the bench, as kind of like a, you know, that energetic lead guard like you'd see in the NBA, you know, bring him on at the under, you know, at the under 16 or somewhere in there to kind of give everybody a boost, especially if shots aren't falling early.
Perfect six man.
Yeah. I mean, that's a thought for me.
He does have that prototypical energy six man kind of personality to his game. Just a question of whether it's going to bother him. He seems like a team player, but he admitted that it bothered him a little bit in that first game, although he still came off the bench and, you know, kind of took over the game. So, you know, I guess it's a question of who you start. Then you probably have Ayala and Wiggins and Cowan all starting, I guess. Yep. It's a tough call. I mean, he's been really good in both roles. He had, I guess, two of the three games he was really good, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I think with the way he's played, he's probably just earned the starting spot. But I could see Turgeon mixing it up based on, you know, matchups and stuff like that, or just who's playing well.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm just curious, just brainstorming. You know, I'm no savant, but like that feels like a thing you could try and do to maybe shake things up a little bit, try and get out of these slow starts, because they've only got a couple weeks here to kind of figure that out. Once they start playing real teams, you know, you can't go down 10 or 15 early and expect to be able to pull back the way they have. Okay, so. Just looking at what we've seen so far, I want to get all three of us here just to talk about who do you think are your top three performers on the team at this moment. Let's start with Jeff, then go to Med.
Oh, I'd say I think Morsell's been their best player so far. Then I would probably, man, that's really tough because Morsell, Sticks, Cowan, and Wiggins have all been really good. I would probably say Sticks in that second spot. He's the leading scorer and rebounder. He hasn't really blown up and had, you know, one of those big 28 and 12 kind of games, but he's been really good. And then can I do a tie between Cowan and Wiggins? I guess I'll go Cowan in that third spot. Wiggins has been all over the place. You know, like I said, three steals a game, but Cowan, I think, has been more important just by the way he's played. He's been so unselfish. He's not forcing the shot. His assist to turnover ratio is like 18-7 or something like that. Whereas in past years, it was like, you know, it was almost equal. So, you know, that to me, regardless of how Wiggins has played, how Cowan has played, you know, puts him in that spot.
Yeah. Yeah, and I kind of agree. I just think the way that Cowan's kind of just playing up so unselfish, and the way he's just kind of trying to get everyone else kind of involved, that you can kind of see a little bit more of that this year and doing a little bit better job of it. But yeah, I mean, I actually do agree with Jeff. I like Morsell a lot this year. I just like the fact that he kind of does a good job of just continuing to change things up. And he's a guy that can kind of break down inside. He has a good shot inside. And obviously defensively, I think he's still the best player on the team. I'm a little just disappointed with Sticks. I just think that, you know, with his length, I think that Maryland really should be expecting a little bit more out of him on the defensive board. So I think that's a glaring concern. And like Paul, you said earlier, the fact that the strength of schedule is not, we haven't really seen that much yet. It's just a little bit of a concern early on, but I like Wiggins a lot too. I don't think that he's going to be able to shoot the way he continues to shoot. I think he's obviously going to be able to improve, but I think he has a really good mature skill set in his game now.
Yeah, I think I'm in about the same place. I mean, with Cowan, I think you're both right in that, you know, Cowan's doing what he needs to do for this to be a good team. You know, Cowan putting up 22 shots a game and, you know, hero balling it is not going to work for this squad, at least as far as I can tell. And to me, Jeff, it looks like Cowan almost seems to know that he doesn't have to be that guy, because it almost feels like this year he's a little more comfortable knowing that he's not going to have to put up 25 for this team to win.
Absolutely. And I think he, you know, we've said it before, I think he just wants to win. You know, he hasn't really won in anything of any significance in his career. So I think that, you know, that's made him unselfish, and There's a lot of times in the past when he would have looked to get going if he got off to a poor start where he's, you know, he's looking for teammates. So that's exactly what you need out of him, especially when you have all these other guys who can help now.
Exactly. And it, when it comes to Wiggins, it's his aggressiveness that is different. I mean, I remember when Wiggins came in last year, it actually reminds me a little bit of Dante Scott from what we've seen him, of him so far, where like you could tell the talent is there. Just he looks just a little bit off, a little passive, maybe not quite fitting in with the style of play with the other guys yet. But you know he's going to turn out to be good.
He's
this
a lot
year,
more confident.
Yeah, dude, Wiggins is nuts right now. I mean, he's already had a couple monster dunks, some power drives, things that like it's almost like the game, you know, the coach speak, the game is slowed down for him. I mean, it almost looks like with him, like he's just figured it out. And God help us all when the threes start raining down, because that's when his game's going to be complete.
Yeah, it's almost at that point where you start worrying about how long he stays. I think he's a 3 year guy. Just obviously depends on the, if he starts shooting a three at 44% or something and plays like he has been, that's a different story. I still feel like he seems like that 3 year guy, but man, he has matured, you know, from a kid into a player during the off season. So, I mean, three steals a game, he's blocking shots, he's rebounding, he's attacking, you know, a lot of people said during the off season, he was the X factor and, you know, we'll see if he starts shooting better, but he's been their best. Well, you can't really say their best because it just had Kevin Herter, but he looks good.
He reminded me of Herter the whole time last year. I was like, Herter freshman year, same idea. Like, you know, the talent's there. He just couldn't quite, you know, everything was just a little too fast for him. But like now It seems like the whole thing's come together and, you know, we'll see if he could do it against the real teams. But I mean, so far, so good for him. Okay. Yep. So what would everyone's biggest surprise be so far that you've seen in terms of a player that's maybe played better than you expected coming out of the break?
I think Ayala has looked a lot more athletic. You know, he lost a lot of weight. He's been really assertive. We knew he was a good player, but he kind of struggled toward the end of last year. He took off some of that baby fat. Now he's going up for dunks. So it's not necessarily a surprise, but, you know, because otherwise really guys have, you know, I guess Wiggins would be just because of how much better he looks. But there hasn't been like a huge, I mean, we heard all the talk about Dante Scott heading into this season. Otherwise that would be it. But I guess just Ayala to me looking kind of like a different guy, quicker, more athletic.
Yeah. I mean, I actually kind of like Scott. I just the fact that he's a little bit more versatile and, you know, I know he's young. There's something about him in his game that I just like really like. I just think he's, he could kind of finish around the rim a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I just think, again, it's just still kind of a little bit small of a sample size. You know, it's just, it's only been a couple games so far.
Yeah, for me, it's Morcell, I think. I mean, he just looks complete this year in a way that he wasn't before. I think the issue with Daryl is, like, you still don't want, you know, that kind of guy to be your, like, number one or two option. But he could also be the best, you know, the type of number three option on a championship team. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, right. He's the perfect guy for that role. He really is. You're right. He is the biggest surprise. I kind of omitted him because I've been a little bit of a fanboy with him. I felt like he was going to have a good year. But yeah, clearly the way he's played is the biggest surprise. I got to go with you on that one.
Yeah. And if he, you know, it's another scenario where, like, if he can keep that level up, you know, and not have those kind of like head shaking mistakes that you see his first 2 years, you know, and it would make sense for it to happen. You know, his development plan has been it's pretty steady upwards. You know, you just never knew whether he would be able to take that next step. But, you know, that's another scenario where if you're looking forward and think, okay, well, maybe this team is different. That's one of the signs, I think, as to what might make it so. Let's talk a little bit about the freshmen. Jeff, what are your impressions on the three freshmen that have played a bunch here?
I mean, I really like Scott. How can you not? He plays like a grown man, both in terms of physicality and just his confidence and aggressiveness. You know, he's ready to roll, and he can do a little bit of everything for you. You know, he's not a great rebounder, but he's a solid rebounder. He attacks. He can shoot the three. The Mitchell twins, you know, Makai was more highly regarded by quite a bit, but Mikkel's, you know, he's been pretty close. You can't say he's been clearly worlds better than his brother. The biggest thing with Makai is fouled. He just gets fouled. What do you have, four fouls in like 8 minutes or something like that the other day? spent the rest of the game on the bench. Turgeon said that he still fouls a lot in practice. And generally, once a guy learns to stop fouling in practice, then like 3 weeks later, he'll stop fouling in the game. So maybe by Big Ten play, he'll start to figure that out. But he's just so foul prone. Mikel, you know, he's a solid reserve guy to give you a few minutes off the bench. And Hakeem Hart actually looked pretty capable in those few minutes in the blowout the other day. You know, he had a nice little running scoop shot. He took 6 free throws in like 5 or 10 minutes of playing time, whatever it was. I think with the numbers game, you're not going to see a ton of him this year, but he looked like a guy who can, you know, help you down the road. So, you know, all around pretty solid. The good news is for Maryland, obviously, you don't have to rely on those guys too much because you have so many good players in that top 6 or 7 of the rotation.
Yeah, I think with the Mitchell twins, I think maybe I'm slightly disappointed in Mekhi and maybe a little more excited about Mikel. Mikel had a really good stretch in the game against Oakland a couple days ago where, you know, he's got some little crafty, you know, both of those guys are kind of below the rim guys at this point in their in their careers. But, you know, we'll see what kind of shape Kyle Tarp can get them in as they grow older. But, you know, both Mikel's tricky. You know, he's got some size and he's got some little moves underneath the basket. I thought he played pretty well when his brother got in foul trouble pretty early in the game. So them being maybe closer to each other might be end up being a good thing. I wasn't sure Mikel was going to be playable this year, whereas now it looks like he might be able to give us some minutes, which I think they're going to need against these, you know, Big Ten bruising teams.
Yep.
And with Dante Scott, again, you know, the talent's there. He just looks a little bit off, like, you know, maybe not quite on the same page as the guys a lot of the time, but, you know, that's something that can be fixed. And they're not going to need a ton from him this year. Just kind of whatever he can give you as bonus in terms of depth and, you know, positional versatility.
And then hopefully a month from now, you're adding Mariel into that mix. That's, I keep saying it, but that's where things get really interesting if you get him in. I mean, it's, you know, you really can't put too much hopes in it, all things considered, with the health and the so much time away from the court. But man, if he comes back and is even, you know, halfway what he's supposed to be, that helps you at your most pressing. That's your most pressing need, you know, a defensive rebounding, you get a 7-2 guy in there. So,
yeah, I mean, can you get 10 to 12 minutes and 5 fouls out of him, you know, in a game in West Lafayette? I mean, that's, you know, that might be what you need, you know. That's, it's, for me, it's just kind of like his story has been so crazy. I'm just, in my brain, it's kind of like I'm not willing to put him on the team until I see him run out there the first time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You can't invest too much hopes in it yet, but that's kind of the lottery ticket in your back pocket.
There are worse things to have at this point. Okay. So Maryland plays Fairfield Tuesday night and George Mason on Friday night. And then they're at Temple. Is that on Thanksgiving?
It might be. Yeah. Sometime next week.
28th. Yeah. That's Thanksgiving. So happy Turkey Day. Go to Philly and get, you know, first team to 50 wins. Sounds
fun.
That's
right.
I have no idea if they're any good this year, but that's typically what Temple does to you. Okay, so enough about that. There is a little bit of recruiting going on. Jeff, you had a bit of a scoop on the boards. I imagine you're not going to hold it back since it'll be 2 or 3 days later by this point. Tell the people about Kareem Mane or Main. I don't know what it is.
So Kareem Main, who was Maryland's top point guard prospect for quite a while, 3 or 4 months, from the summer to the fall, you know, and then they had told him basically it was commit now, or, you know, we just can't recruit you anymore because we want to sign somebody in the early signing period. And so he said, okay, well, peace, basically, because he's not ready. He wants to wait it out and see, watch all these teams play, see where he fits the best. So they actually reversed kind of their stance with him and, you know, got back in the mix. They're recruiting him now. Matt Brady, the assistant coach, went out to visit him a couple weeks ago. So, you know, the catch there is that there's a couple of catches. One, he's considering the NBA. He's able to go to the NBA as an international player. I don't think he will. I think he still believes he's a year away, but it's a possibility. The other catch is that, you know, Maryland already got an early official visit from him. They had the very first visit. It was like several months ago already. So by the time he decides, it will have been a long time since he visited. He will have visited all these other schools more recently. You know, as we know, you know, anyone who follows this stuff religiously knows if you get the first visit and then there's a ton of other visits, you very rarely win out. So those are the catches. But, you know, I talked to him last night. He said they're really in the mix. He said they're recruiting him hard. When I asked who was recruiting him hardest, he named them, I think, second. So it's definitely something to follow. You know, if they have a great season, maybe he sees, you know, look what Anthony Cowan, look how much success there is. Anthony Cowan's leaving. I'll have these other guys around me. So he's definitely got to follow. He's, you know, number 25 player in the class. So he's a legit prospect.
Man, somebody should write a book about the point guard chase this season, because I mean, how long were we told nobody wanted to sign at Maryland because of Anthony Cowan? And the second we get a spot open to replace him, everybody's chirping on us.
Yeah, it's really strange. I mean, they did. I feel like they had a pretty good chance or a solid chance of getting Daishon Nix, who was the number one point guard in the country. Kevin Brodus was really well connected there. And before Brodus left, obviously, to take over at Morgan State. And once he left, you know, the kid ended up at UCLA. Maine was their other guy, and then he dragged on longer than they wanted. So, yeah, it's been a long, winding road. But I think, you know, as these kids watch them, they're really poised for a great season. So, you know, if they do what they can do this year, someone's going to want to come on board, whether it's one of these guys we know now or somebody who inevitably decommits somewhere else when a coach is fired or whatever else. There's always guys who pop up in the spring, so.
Yeah, if Maryland could ever make a run and get some juice on the trail, this would be the year to do it.
That's right.
Basketball Tuesday and Friday night. We'll see what happens after that. All right, so the Maryland football team did not lose on Saturday because they did not play on Saturday. They have a bye this week. They're playing Nebraska at home on Saturday. Jeff, they play Nebraska at home. They go on a road to a completely falling apart Michigan State. They got to get at least one of these, right? I mean, they just have to, because they got to find a way to salvage something out of the season.
I think they'll beat Nebraska. I mean, it tells you something that they're just a 4-point underdog at this point. That says how bad Nebraska is, given how much, you know, Maryland's results. They've lost 5 in a row. 4 of those were by at least 26 points. The only close one was Indiana. I feel like they've got to, you know, it's senior day. They're going to want to get one really bad. I'm a big guy on motivation, even though it's hard to really expect them, you know, anything out of them in terms of, you know, like an amazing effort with the effort that we've seen recently. But I think they'll get that on the road at Michigan State. You know, they're not very good, but that's still one that I don't know if I see them winning. But yeah, you really got to get one just to at least get some little tiny grain of positive feeling heading into the off season.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much can't go into the off season on a 7-game losing streak, but I mean, Jeff, I agree with you. I think this weekend is actually the better of the two chances. I think even though Michigan State offensively, they're going through some things. I know the running back, Elijah Collins, he can definitely eat up Maryland's defense, and defensively Michigan State's still pretty good, even though they got torn over by Michigan. But I mean, Nebraska is really not a very disciplined team, and I think Maryland actually can win that in the battle in the trenches. And you know, with Anthony McFarland, another week to kind of rest his ankle injury and kind of get everyone back to 100%. I think this weekend will be a much better result than what we've seen over the last 6 weeks or so.
Now, do we feel like there's a chance you might get Lance Legendary for these two games, or do you think we're going back to the...
I think Jackson or Pegram will end up starting, but I do think we'll end up seeing a lot more of Lance. The fact that Lance can play in both of the final two games, they're going to be able to have some design packages, and Maryland will definitely be able to take advantage of that against Nebraska. I'm not too sure as much as with Michigan State. I don't know if I like that matchup as well, I expect to see a lot of Lance this weekend.
We've got to come up with a Portis package style name for the Lance plays.
Yeah, like, but my thing is Maryland needs to be able to you can't just still bring him in and only run him. You know, you got to be able to at least pose a threat in the passing attack. Otherwise, then what are you doing? You're just putting a running back out there.
Preaching to the choir, homie.
Yeah.
So. No, I hate nothing more than when you bring out the quote unquote athletic quarterback and it's like, oh, what are they going to do here?
I mean, you know? I get it with like a younger guy, you know, first game, just kind of get him settled. And then, you know, I kind of like what Loxley's approach was in the Michigan game, just kind of let him get him settled. And then that last drive, even though it was a last drive, they didn't get points out of it. He was able to drive down the field and strung a couple, even though it was a couple nice throws, he got two passes in there. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think it'll be another chance for him to kind of build on that.
Yeah, they did let him loose a bit at the end of that Michigan game, even though it was well over by that point. You still want to see them get some actual experience, even if they're playing Michigan's twos and threes. Here's one thing I want to note. You know, I'm not a Lox homer, I don't think, but I'm not exactly jumping off the ship given how poorly this season has gone. Let's talk about Scott Frost. This guy coming off a quote unquote national championship at UCF. Nebraska is a dumpster fire right now.
Like, you just got a 2-year extension.
I know.
That's crazy.
I got nothing. I mean, he's a legend there, so I get it. You know, there was no circumstance whatsoever, unless he like ran over the provost with his car, like that he was not going to get plenty of time to turn that program into something that they feel is not, you know, what they believe they are. But I mean, man, they are bad. They are really bad. And just every time you see, it's almost like a lottery. It's almost like first round NFL quarterbacks. Like, no matter what you come in with, no matter what your credentials were, how good you were at this other school or whatever, you just never know what football coaches are going to turn out and whether they're going to be able to build a proper program or not at these places.
Yeah, sometimes there's programs or pro teams, as we know, with a local NFL team, that no matter what you do, you can bring in, you know, Steve Spurrier and bring back Joe Gibbs and do all, you know, some programs are just destined to be in an extended funk. Maybe Nebraska is one of those teams. You know, they were decent under Bo Pelini.
Those 9-10 win seasons weren't enough for
them. Yeah, they kind of took that for granted, canned him, and they haven't done anything since then. I mean, you got to think that Frost will turn it around just based on what he did at UCF, but maybe you never know. He could have just caught, and it wasn't even just that. He did really well as offensive coordinator at Oregon before that, so you would think he'll turn it around, but it is surprising how much they've struggled.
I mean, the only thing I'm kind of thinking of is maybe, and I haven't looked into it too deep, but just kind of looking at it now, it looks like he's going to be able to, the contract runs till 2024, 2026, actually. So, I mean, at that point, it gives him his chance to get his first class through and then some. But another thing was potentially the buyout on the back end is potentially maybe lower, so that Nebraska can, if they want to cut him loose. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of, because I mean, at now 8-14, I don't really get it at all. But Nebraska loves them
next year,
and they look awful.
Yeah, they're super bad.
All right, Maryland by 30.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Yeah, that's Jess been drinking all that pounding NyQuil while he's been sick.
I think it could actually be maybe not, I don't know if as high scoring as Maryland Indiana, but like close to it. Like I could see it being like a 31-28 game, just like really poor defense on both sides and a couple big plays. I think Maryland could, I don't know. I think Maryland will be able to find better consistency, but the big plays on Maryland's against Maryland's defense has been a problem, and Nebraska can take advantage of that.
Yeah, they've got to show something coming off this bye. I mean, they just the way that this team collapsed. You know, we were talking about before, maybe last year. Remember, you know how every year they have the Big Ten coaches do this kind of a, you know, anonymous, you know, coaches poll and whatnot.
Yeah.
And one of the things that coaches had said about Maryland is that the culture is terrible there. And I think a lot of people took that to mean like, you know, the DJ culture, but really it just seems like, you know, the players just give up whenever anything wrong happens. Like, it's the second something goes wrong, they're done. They're out of it.
I mean, yeah, that's also true. But, like, at the same time, Maryland's also going through position coaches. It seems like almost a new one. They've had a new one every year, offensive line. I think since Durkin's first year there, I think it's been someone every single year. I mean, there's just not really been a lot of consistency there. So I think that, and then everything with DJ and I mean, now trying to take it over. Yeah, I think having a lack of culture is something that is understandable, but I think that's why Loxley keeps referring to the season as a developmental season, trying to reinstill that culture and use leveraging guys like Keandre Jones, Shaq Smith to kind of build that up.
Yeah, it certainly seems like
that. I talked to a friend who's a booster the other day. Loxley had a little function with a bunch of them, and he was talking about that, about the culture, and he's got guys showing up late for class who he's still trying to deal with, things like that. You know, it's not a renegade program, but I think he's attributing some of the struggles to the culture, for whatever that's, you know, how much accuracy there is to that, I don't know.
Yeah, it just feels like something that, you know, they need some consistency, and you know, whatever you feel about how well this season's gone, which has not been great, you kind of wonder if they just need to be patient and just say, all right, Loxley, you're going to get 4 or 5 years to just do your thing, bring in your guys, and then you'll, you know, we'll judge you then.
Yeah, you have to give them 4 years.
Right.
Maryland, I just don't think they're in a position to fire him before that. Because, I mean, if you fire him before 4 years, where are you going to turn after that? It's a little problematic.
Well, that's kind of the thing, right? It can't really get much worse.
No.
So.
But I've also heard issues about, you know, kind of a couple weeks ago, just issues about the losing mentality in the locker room, and just kind of how it gets accepted when there's losses immediately after the fact, rather than like kind of, using it to rally and motivate yourself. You just kind of accept the fate. So, yeah, that's 100% going to be something that has to be addressed. And unfortunately, you can't jumpstart that. You just have to. It's just something through consistency and time.
And cycling those guys out.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah, no, there's something to that. I mean, you know, those whispers have been talked about for a long time here. You know, part of the things that one of the things I've always suspected is sometimes when you get these local kids, and a lot of local kids, you know, they're coming to Maryland because they want to stay home. They want to be comfortable. And maybe that's not the best thing that you want, you know, on a guy at a football program. Maybe you want the hungry kid who's from Florida or from North Dakota, you know, who's taking a chance. Maybe a kid who wasn't recruited as, you know, at a high level that you bring in here, but actually plays well. I don't know. It's
the same time though. Here's your segue into recruiting with Ahmed. You got to replace them with guys who are difference makers. You know, it's one thing to get them out. If you're just replacing them with bodies, it's not going to get any better.
Yeah. On that note, Jeff doing the segue for me.
You're welcome.
Ahmed. Yeah.
Maryland, they're going the JUCO route. I've actually posted, I feel like, about 10 kids that have confirmed official visits in December. Plenty of kids out of Independence. They just offered another one tonight out of Independence as well. They're going for another defensive end out of Tyler, Devere Levelston. That's another guy that I do actually expect him to be in College Park in December. You know, Maryland, they're kind of looking for those older guys that are going to be able to kind of have that experience. I've talked to a lot of these guys and a lot of their coaches, and kind of the one thing I kept hearing was, you know, they're just very hard. They're very, I guess, just focus oriented around what their weaknesses are, and they're ready to attack it. So it sounds like a lot of these guys just kind of have that mentality to kind of push themselves. And then you kind of saw a lot of what their tackles, Jeremy Flax, he's a big guy, but they have a couple of tackles that are just a little bit more athletic that do a good job of getting out in space. So I do expect Maryland to go that route. I do also think it's kind of a byproduct of just kind of the lack of real local emphasis right now, in terms of they're just not really able to gain much traction with a lot of these top guys. But you know, I think with the signing day coming about a week or a month away now, the staff's going to be out once the season's over, trying to get to a lot of these high schools, trying to get kids at the last minute. So I think even though right now we're seeing a lot of JUCO guys, maybe some things kind of turn around. There is one defensive tackle, Montre Edwards. He's a 3-star out of Missouri. He's between three schools, and Maryland's actually in a very good spot right now. If you're a VIP member, you'll be able to see a little bit more on the board. But he's a guy that, you know, actually could come in and play day one. So keep an eye on him.
Here's my thing with JUCOs, though. People always, you know, on the message board, oh, we got to locks better load up on JUCOs. We got to get deep pass rushers and this and that. And
they're not good.
You know, that's good. You're getting grown, you know, more mature guys, hopefully. But people, we fall in love with these JUCOs. Who are the most successful junior college players that have come to Maryland in the past 15 or 20 years? Who stands out?
Yeah, I mean,
Deion Long, maybe? I
mean, yeah, Deion Long was solid, didn't nearly live up to his rep. I mean, he sounded like a first round pick. He was injured too.
What you're saying is they've had some nice role players.
They've had some solid. I guess Sean Hill. There's one going way back, right?
Was that an academic prep thing or was that JUCO?
No, it was JUCO. Nobody wanted him out of high school. I think he went to Hutchinson in Kansas.
That might as well have been in the 50s. I mean,
that's a long time ago. That's what I'm saying. There's really not that much JUCO talent out there, and the really good ones are hard to get. So, I mean, hopefully some of these guys can help you. The offensive lineman that they got last year, what's the kid, Bradley, right?
TJ Bradley, yeah,
two years ago. He hurt himself, didn't he?
Yeah, he got hurt. He seemed like he could have been good if he wasn't injured. The other defensive end, I guess, got injured. But there hasn't been a lot. You can't build your roster on JUCOs.
No, I mean, but at the end of the day, I mean, like, you know, there's plenty of kids that are out of high school. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, you're going through your evaluation process. And, you know, if you want to get guys that are more experienced, more developed, more mature, and kind of develop more accountability, I mean, it sounds like that's just the common theme with a lot of these guys. And, you know, a lot of the defensive linemen, you know, they're just more athletic. And, you know, honestly, there's just really not a lot of they're not really doing great right now with a lot of their high school targets in the trenches. So
they got to slip some of those guys. That 0 for 25 in the top 25 in Maryland is just
it's shocking. It's
unbelievable.
Yeah,
I mean even with the noted, you know, issues they have when these, you know, these kids get brought in from St. Francis and, you know, St. John's and stuff like that from out of state, they're not really local kids. But I mean, that's unbelievable. If you told me that Loxie was head coach here and we'd go 0-25 in the state of Maryland, I can't even articulate that.
I would have been shocked if you said 0-10, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
But he'll flip. I mean, it's almost a sure thing he'll flip at least like two of those kids late in the game. That's just what he does. As improbable as it feels right now, based on everything, it'll be shocking if he does, and he always does. You just, you know, you hope it's closer to the top than the 25.
Yeah, but you know, at the end of the day, they can't be getting skill guys. I mean, getting like a five, if they're able to get like five-star Rakeem Jarrett, all right, great. Like, that's a great receiver. But like, again, who is getting him the ball next year? Or like, you know, defensive ends. I mean, they need playmakers at these key positions. So seeing a guy, obviously I know Maryland struggles at St. Francis. They're three blocks from me, and I'm well aware that it's going to be a struggle. But they have two 5-stars, one going to Alabama, one going to LSU. So you just, that's where I think Maryland really needs to turn it around. But, you know, I think Loxley and the staff is very understanding. I think they're aware and a lot more active about it than I've covered in 7 or 8 years, just offering and trying to wide range of targets. I think that's kind of the biggest thing right now. And then bring kids in, see how they look, and then go from there. There's no harm in that. So we'll see.
Defensive ends. You mentioned defensive ends. Who helps their pass rush next year? The pass rush has been so bad, and I don't know who the guy is who supposedly is going to make it better. Nechami
and Rogers are the only two that really spring to mind, and you know, both
Rogers
have been hurt.
Done anything.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
I would expect that. I mean, I don't know if Maryland's going to be able to really get that impact guy this cycle, but that's where I would expect the transfer portal and grad transfers to come and play. I mean, we mentioned the number of the recruits in the class. That's going to include the 2020 class and transfers as well. So just kind of something to think about there.
And at least defensive end is kind of a plug and play situation. So you could sell a transfer on just like, hey, just show up, you know, get 8 sacks and we'll give you, you know, in the Big Ten, and that'll get you NFL notifications, right? You know, that'll get eyes on you that you might not get at Southwest butthole state or wherever you come from. Like there's ways to sell some playing time at a premier position, but you know, you still got to find the kid and make it work.
Yeah.
Southwest butthole state has been producing a surprising amount of NFL players.
That's true. I mean, I heard that game day is going there next year.
Yeah.
You know, check it out. It smells great there. It's out in the open.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's bad. I don't know.
Cut that out of the show, Schwenk.
I had nowhere to go. I wasted my joke already. And I just, you know, sometimes on this thing, when you're doing the hosting thing, you just feel like you need to talk. And maybe sometimes you just shut the hell up.
I'm still sitting here trying to think of junior college players and thinking if we still had the live chat, we would have gotten like 5 decent names already by now from the listeners.
I do miss the chat a little bit. I will admit that. Just because that real time help was useful.
Yeah, like I'll be like, Sammy Maldonado was a transfer Ohio State. Medea Williams, no, I think he came from like Towson or somewhere. They've had good transfers from other schools.
Lots of good transfers. You know, and the other thing, I meant to mention this earlier, but I do feel like Locks will have a better time with the recruiting classes in the future, just being able, you know, he's still only been on campus for what, 10 months now? Like a lot of these guys, their recruitment started long before Locksley ever got here. So you kind of hope that just there will be some inertia with the younger classes that like Locks would be able to get in on early and maybe sell on an idea and a hype that maybe he couldn't sell some of these guys. But God, 025, that's crazy.
What I'll say is I don't think we realize and understand how much that Penn State loss killed them. They had so many guys on campus that day and so many expecting great atmosphere. I mean, that was the perfect storm. I don't think we understand the magnitude of just what that did. And there were plenty of kids that said, okay, I don't know if I'm going to go there. There's also some kids, and you know, it'll be on the site at this point, but there's also some kids that kind of look at that are out of state and say, I think I can go in there and make an impact. But the problem is they're out of state. So, I mean, maybe Maryland gets another opportunity next year in a night game or in a 3:30 game in an Ohio State where they go 52-51 even though it's a loss, just something thrilling. But Maryland will desperately need that buzz. If they can do that next year against one of those top teams, I think they will be able to swing that in their favor. But I think it's gonna sting for this cycle.
Yeah,
what thing you have to be surprised by, and I'm sure Locks is probably very disappointed, is you had all these local coaches all this time lobbying for him, right? He's the guy, hire Locksley. He's a local. He's our guy. And those guys aren't really supporting him in terms. I mean, they don't necessarily tell their players where to go, but let's be honest, coaches have a big say and a lot of times will help a guy who they like get players. And all those local coaches sure haven't been able to do anything to get him any players. That to me is surprising. Maybe that's just what Ahmed was saying about this class and how they, you know, this class, or Paul was saying this class was already being recruited before Locksley came and the Penn State game and everything else. But, you know, I'm a little surprised that none of his guys have sent him any players because that, you know, that is how it works a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does. But I will say I've actually heard it quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. And what I keep hearing from out-of-state guys, and again, they're not the local coaches that are vouching for Locks, but they keep saying, I've known Locksley since he was at Bama. So that, again, I know we mentioned it in the past on the shows, but that's connections that are continuing to help Maryland. But yeah, I mean, the local approach, obviously coaches, they trust Locksley. They understand, but they're very aware of just the long-term project. Like, it's not going to be come in and play for Big Ten championships or big time bowl games or whatnot. I mean, it's, they have to understand that it's a 1 to 2 year project. So some guys are just not as receptive to that.
It's a two-sided coin, right? we knew that Locke's coming in would calm some of the local freak out and the other ramifications of the McNair incident. And that seems to have happened to some degree. But I mean, we've been talking about this with the local coaches forever. I mean, that is the biggest fucking one-way street I've ever seen, with these local coaches who demand that Maryland visits their school, and they demand that they offer early, and they demand that Maryland hires their guy, and then they don't send us shit. I mean, I just feel like this has been a thing that's been happening for a long, long time. And frankly, I'm just tired of giving a crap about what these guys think about anything.
Yeah, I mean, I think Maryland's actually kind of addressed the early offer concerns a lot better with some of the staff that stayed over and with the new staff. They mean they're very aware that if you offer an in-state guy, that's a committable offer. You can't afford to offer a guy and then 6 months from now say, oh, actually, never mind, and rescind it. I mean, that's the stuff that has the local ramifications. So I do think there's been guys that they've been able to overcome that with.
Good, because I'm just
trying to be a little optimistic.
It's just one of the things that really grinds my gears. And yeah.
Hey, DeMatha was the one exception, and now they've got their one kid who's committed decommitting at halftime of the – big game.
Yeah, because Elijah Brooks would totally sell out like a kid that he considers his son over, yeah, you know, some bullshit payment that he got from probably an Ohio State booster, you know, because I know I made a lot of family friends over the summer before I went to college, you know.
Right, exactly. That's,
I mean, come on. It's so ridiculous. God, it's pissed me off even more. I've already cussed enough for this show. Let's end it before this gets any worse. Yeah, right. Thanks for listening. Like I said, basketball's got games Tuesday and Friday. I don't know whether we're going to sneak in a show early next week before Thanksgiving or not. That probably depends on the success or failure of the Maryland football team on Saturday. But keep an eye out for us. We'll be on then, or we'll be on after the holiday, and we'll catch you up with the end of the football season and a little bit of a preview before hopefully Notre Dame with team with a pulse, and then getting close to Big Ten conference play in December in basketball. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are all over InsideMarylandSports.com message boards. We are IMS Radio. We are out.